It's not the European Commission, it is separate. But actually, what worries me is it has really been a license for lawyers. And the fact that people can quote that it is their human right to everything that they need here, but it doesn't seem to be the human rights of victims who live here or born here or whatever, when people who come from other countries use that as a reason for not being deported. And I just think the reason I would like the government to revisit it and to really look at it closely is because I think we don't want civil unrest in this country, but there is a lot of concern growing that actually being a British citizen, it does appear that, you know, you have less rights, and has been said by earlier speakers.
OK, thank you. I could squeeze in Thomas Walsh from Wigan. I think you were at the programme. You asked the question, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Yeah. I did, Mr. Dimble, yes.
Give me 30 seconds worth.
Yes, what I was hoping to say last night, I was hoping to be able to reply to the...
sure, go for it now.
But no one would want to send anyone back to a country that would torture people. But under a British act, we could have it that a control order, so that the people that are risked a life and limb... could be kept under control, something that's not allowed under the Human Rights Act. And also, up to 1998, I think the Human Rights Act was enshrined into our law.
Yes, it was.
I don't think it was such a bad country to live in anyway, and we did virtually have most of the things that are covered by the Human Rights
Thomas
Act.
Thomas Walsh. Thank you for that. Thank you for all your calls or all your emails. Next week, we're going to be at the Cheltenham Literary Festival, and we will be with the historian Max Hastings, Labour MP Caroline Flint, and the very successful blogger Will Straw, plus someone else yet to be announced. Join us there. As I say, have a very good afternoon. It's pretty good. Good afternoon.
Any Answers was presented by Jonathan Dimbleby and produced by Lisa Jenkinson. Now, books on the BBC. Toby Stevens is back as Raymond Chandler's fast-talking private eye, Philip Marlowe, in a landmark series bringing all of Chandler's Marlowe novels to BBC Radio 4. Published in 1953, The Long Goodbye, dramatised by Stephen Wyatt.
I've never managed to acquire many friends. Good friends, that is. I think it must be something to do with the job. Others might disagree and say it's something to do with me. Then I think about Terry Lennox. The first time I laid eyes on him, he was drunk in a Rolls-Royce silver Wraith outside the Terrace of the Dancers. I can't even remember what I was doing outside a smart club like that.
Look, mister, would you mind a whole lot pulling your leg into the car so that I can kind of shut the door? Should I open it all the way so that you can fall out?
His left foot is dangling outside the car as if he's forgotten he had one. He has a young-looking face, but his hair is bone white.
Terry, please.
The girl beside him at the wheel wears a blue mink that almost made the Rolls-Royce look like just another automobile. It doesn't quite. Nothing can.
Sorry, Well...
I have a wonderful idea, darling. Why don't we just take a cab to your place and get your convertible out? It's such a wonderful night for a run up the coast to Montecito.
Awfully sorry, but I don't have it anymore. I was compelled to sell it.
Sold it, darling? How do you mean?
I mean, I had to. For eating money.
Oh, I see.
Look. Buster, I gotta put another car away. You're blocking things. I'll see you some more some other time. Maybe.
He lets the door swing open. The drunk promptly slides off the seat and lands on the seat of his pants. I guess it's always a mistake to interfere with a drunk. But I get him under the arms and get him up on his feet.
Thank you so much.
Oh, he gets so goddamn English when he's loaded. Thanks for catching him.
Shall I get him in the back of the car?
Oh, I'm terribly sorry. I'm late for an engagement. He's just a lost dog. Perhaps you can find a home for him. He's housebroken, more or less.
The Rolls clicks down the entrance driveway onto Sunset Boulevard and is gone.
Well, that's one way of doing it.
Sure. Just look at those curves and all. Why waste it on a lush?
Do you know him?
I heard the dame call him Terry. Otherwise, I don't know him from a cow's caboose.
Get my car, will you?
The white coat helps me to get the guy into the front seat. I feel like I've been holding up a sack of lead.
Thanks very much. He's the politest drunk I've ever met.
They're all bums. Looks like this one had a plastic job.
He's right. The right side of my new friend is frozen and whitish and seamed with thin, fine scars. The skin has a glossy look along the scars. A plastic job, and a pretty drastic one.
What you aim to do with him?
Take him home and sober him up enough to tell me where he lives.
Okay, sucker. If it was me, I'd just drop him in the gutter and keep going.
Good advice. But of course I didn't take it.
Black coffee. I think you need it.
Thanks very much. How come I'm here?
I brought you to my apartment. You squiffed out at the dancers in her roles. Your girlfriend ditched you.
No doubt she was entirely justified.
Are you English?
Oh, I lived there. I wasn't born there. If I might call a taxi, I'll take myself off.
You've got one waiting.
Well, that's very kind of you, but I...
My name's Philip Marlowe. Just don't take me for granted.
Of course not. I'm sorry to be such a nuisance.
His apartment was small and stuffy and impersonal. He might have moved in that afternoon. He was a little shaky and a little shy, but polite as hell. There was no reason why I should ever see him again. He was just a lost dog, like the girl said. Then, the week after Thanksgiving, I did see him again. 3 blocks from my office building, there's a cop car double parked, and the cops inside are staring at something over by a shop window on the sidewalk. The something is Terry Lennox. He hasn't shaved for 4 or 5 days, and his eyes are like holes poked in a snowbank. The cops are about to pounce. I go over fast and take his arm.
What? Straighten up and walk. Can you make it? Are you stinko?
I have been. Right now, I guess I'm just a little empty.
Okay, but make with the feet. You're halfway into the drunk tank already.
Just a minute, Matt.
What have we got here?
This is an emergency. My friend is sick.
Yeah, so I see. Is this gentleman in the soil laundry a real close friend of yours?
Close enough for me to know he needs a friend. He's not drunk. His name is Terry Lennox. He works in pictures.
That's nice. I'd say he didn't work too much lately, though. I'd say he didn't sleep indoors too much lately. Maybe we ought to take him in.
Hey, come on. Your arrest record can't be that low. Not in Hollywood.
Okay, let me talk to you now, buddy. What is your friend's name?
Philip Marlowe. He lives on Yucca Avenue, Laurel Canyon.
Well, you could have just told him.
Yeah, I could have, but I didn't.
Okay. All right, I'll bite this time. Get him off the street.
Come on. It's black coffee. Again.
Thanks.
Lucky you remembered my name.
I made a point of it. I looked you up, too. You're a private investigator.
So why not give me a ring?
Why should I bother you?
Looks like you had to bother somebody.
Asking for help doesn't come easy. Especially when it's all your own fault. Maybe I'll quit drinking one of these days. They all say that, don't they?
I got a feeling about you.
Really? We've only met twice and you've been more than white to me both times. What sort of feeling?
A feeling that next time I'll find you in worse trouble than I can get you out of.
Maybe it's because of this. The scar. Makes me look a little sinister, I suppose.
Maybe that girl didn't walk out on you at the dancers just because you were drunk. Maybe she had a feeling, too.
Sylvia, you mean?
That's her name?
I was married to her once. She's the daughter of Harlan Potter. You've heard of him?
Who hasn't?
He's a multi-millionaire and a cold-hearted son of a bitch. All Victorian dignity on the outside. Inside, he's as ruthless as a Gestapo thug. I married Sylvia for her money. So, no doubt you're wondering why, if I was down and out, and Sylvia has plenty. I couldn't ask her for a few bucks as her ex-husband.
Tell me.
Did you ever hear of pride?
You're killing me, Lennox.
Am I? Sorry. It's the pride of someone who has nothing else. I don't go begging to Sylvia.
The next time was months later. He walked into my down-at-heel brain emporium. He was changed. older, very sober and severe, and beautifully calm. He wore an oyster-white raincoat and gloves and no hat, and his white hair was as smooth as a bird's breast. He talked like we'd seen each other yesterday.
Hey, let's go to some quiet bar and have a drink. If you have the time, that is. You may or may not want to congratulate me.
Oh?
Sylvia and I got rehitched in Las Vegas.
Nice, if there's no price tag.
Price tag? There's always a price tag, chum. But you should see my new car.
How's your drinking?
Perfectly elegant. Let me tell you something. These gimlets, they don't know how to make them here. What they call a gimlet is just some lime or lemon juice with gin and a dash of sugar and bitters. A real gimlet is half gin and half roses lime juice and nothing else. Beats martinis hollow.
I never forgot that. It's what I'm drinking now. A gimlet for Terry Lennox.
Alcohol is like love. The first kiss is magic. The second is intimate. The third is routine. After that, you take the girl's clothes off.
What I don't get is why a guy with your privileges would want to drink with a down-at-heel private eye.
Are you being modest?
Nope. I'm just puzzled.
Not many people looked after me before I remarried Harlan Potter's daughter.
I hope your home life is adequate.
I don't have any home life.
I don't get that. Am I supposed to?
I guess Sylvia's happy enough, though not necessarily with me. In our circle, that's not too important. There's no real fun, but the rich don't know that. Mostly I just kill time, and it dies hard. A little tennis, a little golf, a little swimming and horseback riding, and the exquisite pleasure of watching Sylvia's friends try to hold out to lunch before they start killing their hangovers.
You didn't have to have it the way it is.
Yeah, I know. I'm a weak character without guts or ambition. I suppose I'm sorry for Sylvia. Could be I'm fond of her in a remote sort of way. Someday, she'll need me, and I'll be the only guy around not holding a chisel. Likely enough, then I'll flunk out.
You do a great job of selling yourself.
Sylvia's scared. She's scared stiff.
What of?
I don't know. We don't talk very much. Sylvia's a tramp. Her father knows it, and he hates it, and there's nothing he can do about it. But he waits, and he watches, and if Sylvia ever gets into a big mess of scandal, he'll break her in half and bury the two halves 1,000 miles apart.
You're her husband.
He lifts his empty glass and brings it down hard on the edge of the table. It smashes with a sharp ping.
Like that, chum. Like that. Oh, sure. I'm her husband again, that's what the record says. I'm the three white steps and the big green front door and the brass knocker. You wrap one long and two short, and the maid lets you into the $100 whorehouse.
Some money for all those gimlets. Poor though I am, I pay my way. You talk too damn much, and it's too damn much about you. See you later.
Look, I'm sorry. Hey!
He called something after me, but I kept going. 10 minutes later, I was sorry. But 10 minutes later, I was somewhere else. I got to him where it hurt. I didn't see him again for a month.
Yeah, yeah.
The persistent ringing of the doorbell yanks me out of bed. He stands there, looking as if he hasn't slept for a week. He seems to be shivering. A dark felt hat is pushed over his eyes. He has a gun in his hand. It's not pointed at me, he's just holding it. With a white face and the scars, he could have stepped right out of an old-fashioned gangster movie.
Listen, you're driving me to Tijuana to get a plane at 10:15. I have a passport and visa, and I'm all set except for transportation. For certain reasons, I can't take a train or a bus or a plane from L.A. Would $500 be a reasonable taxi fare?
Come on in.
I'm in a great deal of trouble.
Yeah, I got that idea.
Didn't sleep at all last night.
Just sit there. Don't say a word, just sit.
No.
Be very careful what you tell me. If you really want me to ride you down to Tijuana, there are two things I must not be told. Are you listening?
Yes, thanks very much.
One, If you've committed a crime or anything the law calls a crime, a serious crime, I mean, I can't be told about it. Two, if you have essential knowledge that such a crime has been committed, I can't be told about that either. Not if you want me to drive you to Tijuana. That clear?
Of course. I'm in a jam.
I heard you. I don't want to know what kind of jam. I have a living to earn, a license to protect.
I could hold a gun on you.
Not to Tijuana, you couldn't. Anyway, I'd look great telling the cops I was so scared I just had to do what you told me, supposing, of course, which I don't know, that there was anything to tell the cops.
Listen, it'll be noon or even later before anyone knocks at the door. But by about noon, her maid would knock and go in. Sylvia wouldn't be in her room. There's a big guest house pretty far from the main house. The maid would eventually find her there.
I have to be very careful what questions I ask you, Terry. Couldn't she have spent the night away from home?
Servants always know. It would be the guest house. Hell, do you think they don't know what goes on? So, the maid would find her...
Sylvia, dead drunk, paralyzed, spifflicated, iced to the eyebrows.
Of course. That's how it would be.
You say you have a passport and a visa? So you've been planning to blow for some time.
I guess I felt some vague obligation to be around, some idea she might need me for something more than a front to keep the old man from nosing around too hard. Oh, by the way, I tried to call you in the middle of the night.
I sleep hard. I didn't hear.
Then I went to a Turkish bath. I stayed a couple of hours, had a steam bath, a plunge, a rub down, and made a phone call from there.
Does this phone call concern me?
It was to Harlan Potter. I had a lot of trouble getting him. But he finally talked to me. I told him I was sorry, but I was leaving.
How did he take it?
He wished me luck. Asked if I needed any money. Money. Those are the first five letters of his alphabet. I said I had plenty.
Did you ever find her with a man in the guest house?
I never tried. It wouldn't have been difficult. Never has been.
Lots of men? A tramp? But you went back and married her again. I realize she's quite a dish, but all the same.
I told you I was no good. Hell, why did I leave her the first time? Why after that did I get stinking every time I saw her? She's been married five times, not including me. Any one of them would go back at the crook of her finger, and not just for $1 million.
Just why does it have to be the 10:15 at Tijuana?
There's always space on that flight.
All right. I'll buy that. But maybe it would be better if you called the police.
Call them yourself. I haven't anything to tell them.
God damn it, can't you be straight with anybody?
I'm sorry.
Sure you're sorry. Guys like you are always sorry. And always too late. We hardly speak on the way down to Tijuana. I waited while Terry got his ticket.
I'm all set. This is where I say goodbye. I left 5 C-notes in your coffee can. Don't be sore at me.
I'd rather you hadn't.
I'll never spend half of what I've got.
Good luck, Terry. Climb aboard. I know you didn't kill her. That's why I'm here.
I'm sorry, but you're wrong about that. You have plenty of time to stop me.
He walked. I watched him. He didn't signal or wave, neither did I. He went into the plane and the steps were pulled back. When I got back home, the cops were waiting.
Your name, Marlowe. We want to talk to you.
They'd found my phone number on a pad in Terry's room. Sylvia Lennox had been murdered in the guest house at their place in Encino. The butler discovered her in the morning. She was naked as a mermaid on the bed. She'd been shot and her face had been smashed to pieces with a bronze statuette of a monkey. It was beaten to a pulp. I didn't figure Terry Lennox would do something like that. She cheated on him. She always had. They'd been divorced and remarried. It didn't make him happy, but why would he suddenly go crazy about it? The cops didn't see it that way, of course. I wouldn't tell them when I'd last seen Terry or what I knew about him, so they jailed me as an accessory to murder. But I wasn't in prison for him. I was in prison for me. No complaints. I'm in a business where people come to me with troubles.
How long would they come if some bruiser with a police shield could hold me upside down and drain my guts? A smart lawyer came to see me. He was sent by old man Harlan Potter, Sylvia's father. That set me thinking. Potter was supposed to be worth hundreds of millions of bucks, and he owned 9 or 10 newspapers. This case had everything. Sex, scandal, money, a beautiful, unfaithful wife, wounded war hero husband. I suppose that's where he got the scars. Hell, it'd be front page stuff for weeks. Every rag in the country would eat it up. But for once, Harlan Potter didn't want to sell any newspapers. He wanted to shuffle all of it, including his dead tramp of a daughter, off to a fast fade. I sent the smart lawyer away and waited.
They just signed your release order.
Oh?
Don't thank me. Sometimes I have unpleasant duties. Letting you out's one of them.
But why?
Terry Lennox was in Mexico all along. Guy with hair and scars like that sort of stands out down there.
They told me there'd been sightings of him, as if I cared.
Well, maybe this'll make a difference. Lennox case is closed, mister. There ain't any Lennox case. He wrote out a full confession this afternoon in his hotel room and shot himself. You know, Tata Clan, if you're interested. Come on, Buster. Move. Get out of that goddamn cell. A man likes to get home nights once in a while.
So now there wasn't going to be a trial. Very convenient for Harlan Potter. I went back to my office and my job. I thought about Terry Lennox in a detached sort of way. He was already receding into the distance, white hair and scarred face and weak charm, and his particular brand of pride. I couldn't judge or analyze him. He was like somebody you meet on board ship and get to know very well, but never really know at all. Except other people wouldn't let me forget him. The telephone and the door buzzer go at the same time.
Marlo?
I answer the phone first because the buzzer only means somebody has walked into my pint-sized waiting room. The call is from the smart lawyer. Lots of blah, but the message is clear. Keep quiet about what you know, or there'll be trouble. So I wipe the scowl off my face and open the communicating door into my waiting room.
What can I do for you?
Tarzan on a big red scooter.
What?
You, Marlowe. Tarzan on a big red scooter. Did the cops rough you up very much?
Here and there. What makes it your business?
Oh, you are small time. Very small time.
He has thick, dark, wavy hair. He's tanned, very dark. He looks up with bird-bright eyes and smiles under a hairline mustache. His tie was a dark maroon, tied in a pointed bow over a sparkling white shirt.
How much you make in a month, Marlo? You're a peanut grafter. You're so little it takes a magnifying glass to see you. In my book, you're a nickel's worth of nothing. Know who I am, cheapie?
Your name is Menendez. The boys call you Mendy. You operate on the strip.
Yeah. Oh, how'd I get so big?
I wouldn't know. You probably started out as a pimp in a Mexican whorehouse.
I'm a big, bad man, Marlo. I make lots of dough. I got to make lots of dough to juice the guys I gotta juice. In order to make lots of dough to juice the guys I got to juice. I got a place in Bel Air that cost 90 grand. I got a lovely platinum blonde wife, 2 kids in private school back east. Best food, best drinks, best hotel suites. What you got?
Stop hamming and tell me what you want.
We were 3 guys in a foxhole eating. It was as cold as hell. Snow all around. We ate out of cans. Cold food. Little shelling. More mortifier. We're blue with cold, and I mean blue. Randy Starr, me. This is Terry Lennox.
Randy Starr is in your type of business now?
Kind of. May I continue? A mortar shell plops right in the middle of us, and for some reason, it does not go off. Those Jerrys have a lot of tricks. They got a twisted sense of humor. Sometimes you think this channel's a dud, and 3 seconds later, it ain't a dud. Terry grabs it, and he's out of the foxhole before Randy and me can even start get unstuck. But I mean quick, brother, like a good ball handler. He throws himself face down and throws the thing away from him, and it goes off in the air. Most of it goes over his head, but a hunk gets the side of his face. Right then, the crowds mount an attack. Next thing we know, we ain't there anymore.
Thanks for telling me.
Randy and I talked things over. We decided that what happened to Terry Lennox was enough to screw up any guy's brains. For a long time, we figured he was dead, but he wasn't. The crowds got him. They worked him over for about a year and a half. They did a good job, but they hurt him too much. Cost us money to find out, and cost us money to find him. But we made plenty in the black market after the war. We could afford it. Well, Terry gets out of saving our lives as a half of a new face. White hair, bad case of nerves. Back east, he hits the bottle and kind of goes to pieces. I got connections in Mexico that could have buried him forever. I could have got him out of the country faster than a card sharp can stack a deck. But he goes crying to you. Makes me sore. A cheapie. A guy cops can push around.
The cops can push anybody around. What do you want me to do about it?
Just lay off.
Lay off what?
Trying to make yourself dough or publicity out of the Lennox case. It's finished. Wrapped up. Terry's dead and we don't want him bothered anymore. The guy suffered too much.
You and Harlan Potter's expensive lawyer.
What are you talking about?
Do you care? I'm not looking for publicity and nobody's offered me any dough. Why should they and for what?
Don't kid me, Marlowe. You didn't spend 3 days in the freezer just because you're a sweetheart. You got paid off. The Lennox case is closed. And it stays closed.
Even if Terry didn't kill her?
Well, I'd like to go along with you on that, Cheapy, but it doesn't make any sense. But if it did make sense, and Terry wanted it that way, then that's how it stays.
This is getting monotonous. All tough guys are monotonous. You got everything and you got nothing. You're just sitting there looking at yourself. No wonder Terry didn't come to you for help. It would have been like borrowing money from a whore.
Oh, I'm sorry you said that, Cheapy. You could crack wise once too often.
I remember that I sat down and spent a little time wondering why a fairly important racketeer would think it worth his time to come in person to my office and warn me to keep my nose clean. Just after I'd received a similar, though differently expressed, warning from Mr. Harlan Potter's smart lawyer. I might have wondered longer if the phone hadn't started ringing again.
Mr. Philip Marlowe?
Yes?
My name's Howard Spencer. I'm the representative of a New York publishing house. I'm here in California on a brief business trip. There's a problem I'd like to discuss with you. Could you meet me in the bar of the Ritz-Beverly Hotel at 11 a.m. tomorrow?
What sort of problem?
Rather a delicate one, but entirely ethical. If we don't agree, I shall expect to pay you for your time, naturally.
Did someone I know recommend me to you?
Somebody who knows you, including your recent brush with the law, Mr. Marlowe. My business, however, has nothing to do with that tragic affair. It's just that, well, let's discuss it over a drink rather than over the telephone.
The call had nothing to do with anything, so far as I knew. How could I guess that in the end it'd have something to do with Terry Lennox? After all, he was dead, wasn't he? Just then, a letter through the box. It has Correo Aéreo on it and a flock of Mexican stamps. It begins without date and without preamble.
I'm sitting beside a second-floor window in a room in a not-too-clean hotel in a town called Otatoclan.
It must have been written just before he shot himself.
I want you to have this money because I don't need it, and the local gendarmerie would swipe it for sure. It's not intended to buy anything. Call it an apology for having caused you so much trouble. I might have killed her, and perhaps I did, but I never could have done the other thing. That kind of brutality is not in my line. So, something is very sour. Forget about it. And me. But first, drink a gimlet for me at Victor's. And the next time you make coffee, pour me a cup and put some bourbon in it and light me a cigarette and out it beside the cup. And after that, forget the whole thing. Terry Lennox, over and out.
So even he's asking me to forget. Was that why he phoned Harlan Potter on the night of his wife's death? Inside is a portrait of Madison. A portrait of Madison is a $5,000 bill. I'd never seen one before. Lots of people who work in banks haven't either. I sit there. I look at it for a long time. I do what he asked. When his cigarette has stopped smoking and is just a dead butt, I drop it in the garbage can. That's that. It doesn't seem quite enough to do for $5,000. The Ritz-Beverly bar is pretty empty, and this high-powered publisher man is already 20 minutes late. I'll wait half an hour, and then I'll leave. It never pays to let the customer make all the rules. Just then, a dream walks in. Her hair is the pale gold of a fairy princess. She's slim and quite tall in a white linen tailor-made with a black and white polka-dot scarf around her. The old waiter has the table pulled out in a way no waiter has ever pulled a table out for me. She sits and thanks him with a smile so gentle, so exquisitely pure, he's damn near paralyzed. She orders something, and he hurries away like a guy who really has a mission in life.
Mr. Marlowe, I'm Howard Spencer. I'm shockingly late. I apologize. But I don't expect you're much interested in publishers and their problems.
Oh, I can read a book once in a while.
Let's get some drinks. Waiter.
The old waiter's thoughts are still elsewhere.
Yes, sir.
With a golden girl.
Gin and orange for me. A silly sort of drink, really, but I have a weakness for it. Will you join me?
Sure.
Good. Two gin and oranges.
Sure.
One of our most important authors lives around here. Maybe you've read his stuff. Roger Wade?
Uh-huh.
I see your point. You don't care for historical romances, but they sell.
I don't have a point, Mr. Spencer. I looked at one of his books once. I thought it was tripe. Is that the wrong thing for me to say?
Oh, no. There are many people who agree with you. But the point is that he's an automatic bestseller, and every publisher has to have a couple with the way costs are now.
So what's your problem?
We're in bad trouble with Roger Wade. He can't finish a book. He's losing his grip, and there's something behind it. The man seems to be going to pieces. Wild fits of drinking and temper.
Your drink, sir.
Thank you. Every once in a while, he disappears for days on end. Not very long ago, he threw his wife downstairs, put her in the hospital with five broken ribs. I realize this sounds like a job for a psychiatrist. Mrs. Wade disagrees. She's convinced that he's perfectly sane, but that something is worrying him to death. Blackmailer, for instance. Something from his past may have caught up with him. We don't know what it is, and we want to know. In the meantime, Mrs. Wade has to be protected. He might kill her the next time.
You don't want a detective. You want a magician. How could I be there at exactly the right time? Nor am I in the market for being a male nurse.
A male nurse wouldn't be any use. Roger Wade's not the kind of man to accept one. He's a very talented guy who's been jarred loose from his self-control.
Also, he's damn dangerous. He has a guilty secret and he tries to drown it in alcohol. It's not my kind of problem, Mr. Spencer. But if you want me to, I'll go see the man and try and size him up. But my guess is he'll throw me out of the house.
No, Mr. Marlowe, I don't think he'd do that. On the contrary, I think he might like you.
I look up into a pair of violet eyes. It's her. This is really a dish.
Please, don't get up. I know I owe you an apology, but it seemed important to me to have a chance to observe you before I introduce myself. I'm Eileen Wade.
He's not interested, Eileen.
I disagree.
What I said, or meant to say, was that I didn't think I could do any good. And it might be a hell of a mistake for me to try. If you're afraid of your husband, I suggest you move out. Nobody could protect you 24 hours a day from your own husband. You can't buy destiny.
You're deciding too soon. You can't judge people by what they do. If you judge them at all, it must be by what they are. Did Howard tell you he hadn't seen my husband this visit?
Eileen, what has this got to do with...
Because my husband has been missing for 3 days. I don't know where he is. I've come here to ask you to find him and bring him home.
This isn't the first time this has happened?
No. I brought you a check for $500, Mr. Marlowe. Will you accept it as a retainer?
Why? You said he's been gone 3 days. Takes 3 or 4 to sober a man and get some food in him. Won't he come back the way he did before? Or does something make this time different?
Eileen, you don't have to answer.
He can't stand much more of this, Mr. Marlowe. It'll kill him. The intervals are getting shorter. I'm badly worried. I'm worse than worried. I'm scared. It's unnatural. We've been married for 5 years. Roger was always a drinker, but he's not a psychopathic drinker. Something's all wrong. I want him found.
Any idea why he drinks?
Maybe it's me. Men fall out of love with their wives.
Or maybe he's fallen out of love with the kind of stuff he writes.
Yeah, that's possible, too.
So it's blackmail, as Mr. Spencer suggested.
We just don't know. So will you take the job?
Eileen, maybe I should handle the negotiations.
No, thank you. What do you say, Mr. Marlowe?
I don't want your money, Mrs. Wade. You want him found, you're worried. You're more than worried. So how do I go about finding him?
Well, when he's drunk, he types himself notes, then screws them up and puts them in the wastebasket. There's one that I found which may mean something here.
I do not like you, Dr. V, but right now you're the man for me.
We don't know any doctor with a name beginning that way.
If he is a doctor.
So what do you say, Mr. Marlowe?
Okay. I'll try to find Dr. V. I don't know just how, but I'll do my best. Take the check home with you, Mrs. Wade, and I'd rather have it from Mr. Wade. He's not going to like what I do in any case. This is a good gimlet. It should have been hard, but in fact it was easy. Maybe that should have made me suspicious. There weren't many legitimate doctors whose name began with V, and only one of them fitted the picture. A Dr. Verringer, who ran a sort of art colony for writers and such, who want seclusion and a congenial atmosphere. He called himself doctor, but he didn't practice medicine. The setup was pretty weird. A few days longer and Roger Wade would have been signing checks to pay for the drug habits of Dr. Verringer's boyfriend. But I got him out of there, much to the chagrin of Dr. Verringer and the boyfriend. Wade was big and pale, and he needed a shave.
He handled me like a baby. He hardly left me alone for fear Earl would come in and beat me up. He took every dime I had in my pocket.
You probably told him to.
You are on Verringer's side?
Skip it. This is just a job for me.
The turnoff is pretty close now. By the way, you haven't told me your name.
Philip Marlowe.
Nice name. Wait a minute. You the guy that was mixed up with Lennox?
Yeah.
I knew her a little. Sylvia Lennox, I mean. Queer business, that. The law boys gave you the rough edge, didn't they? Maybe you don't like to talk about it.
Could be. Why would it interest you?
Hal, I'm a writer. Sounds like quite a story.
Take tonight off. You must be still feeling pretty weak.
Okay, Milo, okay. You don't like me. I get it.
I don't either like you or dislike you. I don't know you. Your wife asked me to find you and bring you home. When I deliver you at your house, I'm through. Why she picked on me, I couldn't say. Like I said, it's just a job.
How much is she paying you?
We didn't discuss it.
Whatever it is, it's not enough. I owe you a lot of thanks. You did a great job, chum. I wasn't worth the trouble.
That's just the way you feel tonight.
You know something, Willow? I could get to like you. You're a bit of a bastard like me.
Can you make it without help?
Of course. Aren't you coming in for a drink or something?
Not tonight, thanks. I'll wait here until you're in the house.
He's made a lot of money. It's a huge property by a lake in Idle Valley. All that and a gorgeous wife. I'm ready to leave when Eileen Wade appears. I keep going and she starts to run, so I have to stop. I cut the lights and get out of the car.
Did you have a lot of trouble?
I've had a great deal more.
Please, come into the house and tell me all about it.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Wade. Good night.
Oh, you must be tired. Don't you want a drink yourself?
Thank you, but no. So you knew Sylvia Lennox. Was that why you wanted to hire me?
I knew who?
Sylvia Lennox.
Oh, that was the girl that was murdered. No, I didn't know her personally. I knew who she was. Didn't I tell you that?
Sorry, I've forgotten just what you did tell me.
Did Roger say something? Well, I ought to go in and see if he needs anything. And if you won't come in...
I'll leave you with this.
I kiss her hard on the lips. She doesn't fight, and she doesn't respond.
You shouldn't have done that. That was wrong. You're too nice a person.
Sure, very wrong. But I've been such a nice, well-behaved gun dog all day long. You know something? I believed you knew where he was all along, or at least knew the name of Dr. Behringer. You just wanted to get me involved with him, tangled up with him, so I'd feel a sense of responsibility to look after him, or am I crazy?
That is the most outrageous nonsense I've ever listened to.
Wait a minute. That kiss won't leave a scar. You just think it will. And don't tell me I'm a nice person. I'd rather be a heel.
Why?
If I hadn't been a nice guy to Terry Lennox, he'd still be alive.
How can you be so sure? I wish I could persuade you to come in. I love my husband. Not as a young girl loves, perhaps, but I love him. The man I loved then is dead. He died in the war. His name, strangely enough, has the same initials as yours. I still can't quite believe he's dead, which is just very silly of me.
I become aware that we're being watched from the front door. A slender, neat, good-looking Mexican boy.
Who's the boy?
Oh, it's Candy. He's our butler. I didn't realize he was there. Good night, Mr. Marlowe. And, thank you so much for almost everything.
Nothing happened for a couple of weeks, except that I went about my business, which just then didn't happen to be very much business. I assume Roger Wade had found his way back to his typewriter. Then, one Thursday night, about 10 minutes to 11, Wade called me up.
I'm in bad shape, Marlowe. Very bad. I'm slipping in my anchor. Can you make it out here in a hurry?
Sure, but let me talk to Mrs. Wade a minute. Wade, are you there?
In 5 minutes, I'm on the way. She's alone in the house with a drunken maniac. She's lying at the bottom of the stairs with her neck broken. She's cowering behind a locked door. When I get there, it's not like that at all. Lights are on all over the house, and she's standing calmly in the open doorway with a cigarette in her mouth. If there was any excitement around there, I'd brought it with me.
I didn't realize he'd called you.
Where is he now?
He fell down. He must have tipped the chair too far back. He's done it before. He cut his head on something. There's a little blood, not much.
Well, that's fine. We wouldn't want a whole lot of blood. Where is he now, I asked you?
Out there somewhere. By the edge of the road or in the bushes along the fence.
Christ's sake, didn't you look?
No, I didn't look. I've had all of it I can take. You find him.
He's lying on his side in the shadow of the hibiscus. He has a fast, thumping pulse, and his breathing is unnatural. Something at the back of his head is sticky. I slap his face a couple of times, but he doesn't come to. Finally, I get him hoisted into a fireman's lift position and plow across the lawn to the open front door. It seems about the same distance as a round trip to Siam.
Can you get him up to bed?
Not without help. Where's Candy?
This is his day off, but he ought to be home soon. I'll go and see. He has a room by the garage.
Wade's probably just drunk. The cut on the back of his head looks superficial, but you never know. Eileen's back in a minute with the Mexican boy.
Senor?
Candy, help Mr. Marlowe carry my husband upstairs. He fell and hurt himself. I'm sorry to trouble you.
De nada, senora.
Well, I think I'll say goodnight. I'm tired out. Candy will get you anything you want.
Some doll, eh? You stay the night?
Hardly.
It's lastima. She's very lonely, that one.
Get that gleam out of your eye, kid. Let's put this to bed. You take the feet.
La senora, you knock very light. Maybe she lets you in.
I don't say anything because I needed him. I wait till we've dumped Wade on the bed.
Hey, what's your name?
My name is Juan Garcia de Soto y Sotomayor.
Well, listen, Don Juan. Just don't get out of line around here. Keep your nose and mouth clean when you talk about the people you work for.
He jerks loose and steps back, his black eyes hot with anger. His hand slips inside his shirt and comes out with a knife.
Cuidado, señor. Nobody fools with me.
It's done very fast. The knife sails through the air and lands quivering in the window of the doorframe. Then he plucks the knife out, tosses it in the air, spins on his toes, and catches it behind him. With a snap, it disappears under his shirt.
Like I said, be careful, senor.
Neat. But it might just get you a broken elbow. Like this.
I take hold of his right wrist, jerk him off balance, and bring my bent forearm up under the back of his elbow joint. I bear down on it, using my forearm as a fulcrum.
One hard jerk, and your elbow joint cracks. You're out of commission as a knife thrower for several months. Make the jerk a little harder, and you'll be through permanently. Now take Mr. Wade's shoes off.
Good trick. I will remember.
We undress Wade in silence. He's still sweaty and still snoring. Candy digs out a pair of green and silver pajamas.
Somebody's got to take care of him. I go change my clothes.
Get some sleep. I'll take care of him. I can call you if I need you.
You better take care of him good. Very good.
I wash the blood off his head gently so as not to start the bleeding again. It's nothing. A short, shallow cut about 2 inches. I put on a strip of adhesive. Then I turn him on his back and wash his face. I guess that's a mistake.
Who hit me? You.
Nobody hit you. You took a fall.
Took a fall? When? Where?
Wherever you telephoned from. You called me. I heard you fall over the wire.
I called you? Always available, aren't you, fella? What time is it?
After 1 a.m.
Where's Eileen?
Gone to bed. She had it rough.
Did I...
No, you didn't touch her as far as I know. That's what you mean. You just wandered outdoors and passed out near the fence. Quit talking. Go to sleep.
Sleep? What would that be? If I had a 10-year-old kid, which God forbid, the brat would be asking me, what are you running away from when you get drunk, Daddy?
From what I gather, this is rather recent.
I was always a hard man with the bottle. When you're young and in good condition, you can absorb a lot of punishment. When you're pushing 40, you don't snap back the same way. What do you think I'm running away from, Marlowe?
No idea. I don't have enough information. Besides, everybody's running away from something.
Do me a favor, Marlowe. I wrote some crazy stuff I don't want Eileen to see. It's on top of the typewriter under the cover. Tear it up for me.
Sure. That all you remember?
Eileen is all right. Positive about that?
Yeah. She's just tired. Let it ride, Wade. Stop thinking.
Stop thinking, the man says. Stop thinking. Stop
dreaming. Stop loving. Stop hating. Good night, sweet prince. If you'd be so kind, I'll take a couple of those pills in the drawer in the night table.
He isn't far wrong. This really is crazy stuff.
The moon's 4 days of the full, and there's a square patch of moonlight on the wall, and it's looking at me like a big, blind, milky eye. A wall eye. Goddamn silly simile. Writers. Everything has to be like something else. My head is as fluffy as whipped cream, but not as sweet. More similes. I could vomit just thinking about the lousy racket. I could vomit anyway. I probably will. A good man died for me.
A good man died for me. What did that mean? Otherwise, it's a stream of consciousness stuff. Crazy thoughts as he gets drunker and weirder till he reckons he needs to phone someone. Better hold on to it. Oh, and mystery solved. There's a red-brown smear of blood on the metal waste paper basket. When he fell, he struck his head on the sharp corner, then picked himself up and booted the damn thing across the room. Easy. But it still doesn't add up. You'd expect his wife to look for him and find him and make sure he's not hurt. It also bothers me that she checked out and gone up to her own room while Candy and I took him upstairs to bed. There was something else. Another woman, Babs? I might have wondered longer, but I hear a shot. The black gleam of a gun shoots up in the air. Two hands, a large male hand and a woman's small hand, are both holding it. Now she has both hands on the gun, and with a quick jerk, she gets it away from him. I'm surprised she has the strength, even dopey as he was.
It's all right, Marlo. Nobody hurt, just a wild shot into the ceiling.
Poor Roger, poor miserable Roger.
So what happened?
I had a nightmare. Somebody with a knife was leaning over the bed. Looked a little like Candy. Couldn't have been Candy.
Of course not, darling. Candy's gone to bed a long time ago.
Where was the gun?
Night table. In the drawer.
I looked in that drawer for the pills. There hadn't been any gun there. He knew I knew it.
Maybe under the pillow. I shot once up there.
There was a hole in the ceiling plaster, all right. I can see it. But I stand by the bed, giving him the hard eye.
You didn't have any nightmare. You meant to kill yourself. You got up and got the gun from wherever it was, got back into bed, and there you were all ready to wipe out the whole messy business. But I don't think you had the nerve. You fired a shot, not meant to hit anything, and your wife came running. That's what you wanted. Just pity and sympathy, pal. Nothing else. Even the struggle was mostly fake.
You could be right. Does it matter?
It matters like this. They'd put you in a psycho ward. And believe me, the people who run that place are about as sympathetic as Georgia chain gang guards.
That's enough. He's sick, and you know it.
He wants to be sick.
This is not the time to tell him.
Go back to your room.
How dare you?
Go back to your room, unless you want me to call the police. These things are supposed to be reported. Hey, it's all right. You won't do it again. Go back to bed.
Thank you. I'm tired.
Nobody can stop you from killing yourself if you really want to. I realize that. So do you.
Did you do what I asked? That stuff on the typewriter?
Uh-huh. I'm surprised you remembered. It's pretty crazy writing. Funny thing, it's clearly typed.
I can always do that. Drunk or sober. Up to a point, anyway.
That dream of yours. What's Candy got on you?
Shove it.
Candy could be a blackmailer. Sure. Easy. He could even be nice about it. Like you and lift your dough at the same time. What is it? A woman?
I'm not the first loving husband who has been in adultery. Doesn't make me a murderer. Leave me alone, damn you. Leave me alone. Listen, I'm not crazy.
You just hope you're not crazy.
I've been living in hell.
When his eyelids get heavy, I go downstairs. The door of Eileen's room is open.
She's standing there, but there's something strange. She calls out a name, but it wasn't my name. I go up to her.
I always knew you'd come back. Oh, even after 10 years.
I don't understand.
All these years I've kept myself for you. Shut the door.
I shut the door. It seems like a good idea at the moment. When I face her, she's already falling toward me. Her lips open and her teeth open, and her tongue darts.
Oh, put me on the bed.
I touch bare skin. Soft skin. Soft, yielding flesh. The doorknob is moving. I jerk loose and jump for the door. It must have been Candy. Then he's gone. But the spell is broken. He saved me. Some kind of weird noises are coming from the woman on the bed. But that's all they are now. Weird noises. I leave the bedroom and head for the study. I grab a bottle of scotch. That's the last thing of which I took precise notice. A shaft of sunlight tickles one of my ankles. When I look up, Candy is standing there.
The boss is okay. I shut his door. Why you get drunk?
I had to.
Didn't make her, huh? Got tossed out on your can, Seamus.
Have it your own way.
I take care of the boss.
You making him pay?
Oh, yes. Good money.
How much on the side? For not spilling what you know.
No entiendo.
You understand, all right. How much she shaking for?
You give me a couple of $100, and I don't tell the boss you come out of her room last night.
Forget it. You don't have anything to sell.
Just don't come around anymore, tough guy.
Don't worry. I'm leaving. Forget the coffee.
Eileen Wade is in the living room. She looks at me with complete surprise.
Oh, I didn't know you were here, Mr. Marlowe.
I put his gun in the desk in his study.
Gun? Oh, last night was a little hectic, wasn't it? But I thought you'd gone home. You were a wonderful help, Mr. Marlowe. I don't know how to thank you.
Then I see the gold chain round her neck, and some kind of fancy pendant in gold and blue on white enamel. It takes me time to realize it's some kind of military emblem.
I had a very curious dream in the night. Someone I used to know was here in the house, someone who's been dead for 10 years. That's why I'm wearing this today. He gave it to me.
I had a curious dream myself, but I'm not telling mine. Let me know how Roger gets on and if there's anything I can do.
Oh, I wasn't expecting you to make love to me.
I'm glad. So just what did you expect of me, Mrs. Wade, in the beginning when you first persuaded me to go hunting? Why me? What have I got to offer?
You kept faith.
I'm touched. But it's a damn poor reason. Because what I did, keeping faith, is something even a fool doesn't do twice.
You know, this is getting to be a very enigmatic conversation.
You're a very enigmatic person, Mrs. Wade. You don't really want to save him, do you? You just want to look as if you're trying to save him.
That was a very beastly thing to say to me.
I needed to say it.
Then I left. The wife was crazy and the husband, well, maybe he killed Sylvia Lennox in a drunken rage and let Terry Lennox take the rap. I was tired of them all. But life doesn't leave you alone for very long. I got a ring from a guy at a detective agency who owed me a favor. I've been asking around about Terry Lennox, and this guy knew him from a long time back in New York. You don't forget that scarred face. Except he wasn't called Terry Lennox then. He was called Paul Marston, and he was wearing a British Army service badge. PM. Paul Marston. Philip Marlowe. I think it's time for another gimlet.
Why do I never walk away? Maybe owning my portrait of Madison made me even more crazy. I contacted a detective agency in London, gave them the lowdown, and asked them to find anything they could about Paul Marston. Then I get a call from Roger Wade asking me to lunch, and like a fool, I went. He was already drinking.
So how's your book, Mr. Wade?
It stinks.
How far along?
About two-thirds of the way, for what it's worth.
You look good yourself. From the other night, I wouldn't have believed it.
Eileen said I tried to shield myself. Was it that bad?
You don't remember?
Not a damn thing. Except that I fell down and cut my head. After a while, I was in bed. Well, and you were there.
Here's the coke for your guest, boss.
Lunch in half an hour. Where's the white coat?
This is my day off. I ain't the cook, boss.
The cook's off, Candy. I've got a friend to lunch.
You think he is your friend? Better ask your wife.
You watch your lip, little man. You've got it soft here. I don't often ask a favor of you, do I?
So I put the white coat on.
It's okay. I'm not hungry.
Then I don't need to do anything, do I, boss? Can I go?
It's always the day off with you. You go. I'm paying that guy too much money. He's spoiled.
Wages or something on the side.
Candy's not blackmailing me. He likes me.
Maybe you better get drunk again after all. You might remember a lot of things you pretend not to remember.
What are you talking about?
You told me you were an adulterous husband.
Oh, is that it? I suppose you think I killed Sylvia Lennox and let Terry take the rap. She was a tramp, all right. Anybody tell you that. But you don't beat a woman's head in just because she's a tramp.
She wasn't killed with that bronze thing, so the cops said. She was shot through the head with her own gun.
She maybe had a gun, but I didn't know she'd been shot.
Didn't know or didn't remember.
What are you trying to do to me, Marlo? What do you want me to do? Tell my wife? Tell the police? What good would it do?
You wrote that a good man died for you.
All I meant was that if there'd been any real investigation, I might have been identified as one, but only one of the possible suspects would have finished me in several ways.
What's eating you is that you're not sure yourself. It's not an argument to say you don't beat a woman's head in because she's a tramp. That's exactly what somebody did do. And the guy who got the credit for the job seems to me a lot less likely than you.
You know something? Yeah, you're a pretty ruthless son of a bitch. Yeah, you'd do anything to find out what you want. You'd even make love to my wife while I was helpless drunk.
You believe everything that knife thrower tells you?
Not everything, no. It's a pretty color whiskey, isn't it? To cease upon the midnight with no pain. How does that go on? Oh, sorry. You wouldn't know. Too literary. You're some kind of dick, aren't you? You mind telling me why you're here? Goodness me. A check for $1,000 made out to Philip Marlowe for services rendered. Want it? Seems I signed it. Foolish of me. I'm a gullible chap.
Stop acting. Where's your wife?
My wife will be home in due course. No doubt by that time I shall be passed out and she can entertain you at her leisure.
Where's the gun?
Not sure. It's not in the desk. Look. Probably Eileen has hidden it.
Listen, Wade, I asked you where your wife was, not for my benefit, friend, for yours. Somebody has got to look after you, and I'll be goddamned if it's gonna be me.
You know, maybe the amount on this check is too small. Your services come very high. Even $1,000 and my wife fails to satisfy you.
I'm leaving.
But why? You wanted me to remember, huh? Well, here in the bottle is my memory. Stick around, pal.
Okay, here's for starters. Ever heard of anybody called Paul Marston?
Never did. Who's he?
I'll stick around for a while.
Till your wife gets back, but not in here. I'll be in the living room. If you need me, just smash a chair against the wall.
Your wish is my command.
I lie there in the living room, trying to make up my mind what to do. Part of me wants to let him get good and drunk and see if anything comes out. The other part of me wants to get out and stay out. But that's the part I never listen to. Every now and then I go back to the study. He's just sitting there staring at nothing, the scotch bottle getting emptier and emptier. And he's on to the second, then he's asleep. I figure I'll wait until his wife gets home. I go outside onto the patio. I need to feel free of all this. There's a guy fooling around in his speedboat. That's what rich guys do. The waves are still lapping up when I go back into the house. Then I hear the front doorbell. Nobody answers it, so I do.
I'm sorry, I forgot my key. Oh, I'm sorry. I just got back. I thought it was Roger or Candy. Is anything wrong?
Well, there's been a little drinking been done. Not bad. He's asleep on the couch in the study.
He called you?
Yeah, but not for that. He asked me to lunch, but I'm afraid we didn't have any. Did you hide the gun?
Why are you asking?
I've had some rather strange experiences in this house. Guns going off, drunks on the front lawn, lovely women wrapping their arms around me and talking as if I was somebody else, Mexican houseboys throwing knives. It's a pity about that gun.
Well, I'll just go see if Roger's all right.
No, I'll go.
He was on his side. There was a pool of blood, and in that pool lay the pistol. The side of his face was a smeared mask. He must have fired while the speedboat was making such a din. There was no note. I guess writers don't always seize the opportunity.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, he's finally done it.
Yeah, he's finally done it.
Oh, Roger, poor Roger, what can we do?
Call the police.
Why didn't you stop him? Why? Why?
There was something very wrong, but I didn't know what it was. Sometimes I think I would like to be rich. If you're rich, everything can be arranged. Candy could have made trouble, but he didn't. Eileen gave a great inquest. She spoke in a low, clear voice which even the amplifier couldn't spoil. The verdict was suicide. What else? But I'm crazy. I kept on asking questions. Questions of the cops, some of whom were still my friends. Questions of Menendez. He kept on calling me cheapy, but it was a small price to pay for finding out what happened in the war. And because I'm a crazy guy, I paid for English detectives to tell me things. I was waiting for things to make sense. Then Spencer, Wade's agent, gave me a call. He was in town and he wanted to talk to me.
It was a pretty hard blow for us all, Wade's death. I couldn't but notice that your name seemed to be involved. I'm here to see Mrs. Wade and I wondered if you'd be able to fill me in on...
What's there to talk about? The inquest is over. With remarkably little publicity.
Yes, but that's why I wondered if you
might... Let me guess why you're visiting the widow. You want to see if you finished the book, and if there are any other juicy tidbits you can scoop up and publish.
Well, of course. With a writer as important as Roger Wade, we must consider his legacy.
And the profits from it.
But I'm also concerned about Mrs. Wade. You seem very hostile, Mr. Marlowe. Have you spoken to Eileen at all?
Not since she blamed me for not preventing her husband's death. She made life quite difficult for me with the police, then dropped the whole matter at the inquest.
She's probably still very upset.
She talked to the coroner and never batted an eyelid.
So, I take it you're not going to help me out at all before I meet Eileen tomorrow.
I'll drive you to Idle Valley. I'd like to see Mrs. Wade myself.
I don't understand. It doesn't sound like she wants to see you.
I know she doesn't. I can get in on your ticket.
That wouldn't be very diplomatic of me, would it?
She's told you she doesn't want to see me?
Not in so many words,
things don't add up.
Are you going to explain?
I prefer to explain in front of Mrs. Wade. I'd like to have somebody along with me as a witness.
A witness? To what?
You'll hear it in front of her or you won't hear it at all.
Then I won't hear it at all.
You're probably doing the right thing, Spencer.
You want that book of Wade's, if it can be used. And you want to be a nice guy, both laudable ambitions. I don't share either of them. The best of luck to you, and goodbye.
Now, just a minute, Marlo. Are you saying there is some mystery about Roger Wade's death?
No mystery at all. He was shot through the head with a Webley hammerless revolver. Didn't you see the inquest?
Yes, but...
Listen, there are a few things I don't like, nor do my police friends. Why did Roger leave no note when he was a writing fool? Why did he bother to pick at the moment when a speedboat was going by and I couldn't hear the gun go off? Why did she forget her house keys so she had to be let into the house? Why did she leave him alone on the day that Candy and the cook weren't going to be there? She said at the inquest she didn't know I was going to be there. If she did, those two cancel out.
My God, are you telling me Eileen is suspected? I mean, why not suspect you? You were there all afternoon. There could have been only a few minutes when she could have done it. And she said she'd forgotten her house keys. That worries me, too.
What motive could I have?
Is the police investigation still going?
Couldn't say. One thing is sure. They'll know by now whether he had drunk enough hooch to pass out. If he had, there may still be trouble.
And you want to talk to her in the presence of a witness?
That's right.
That means only one of two things to me, Marlo. Either you were badly scared or you think she ought to be.
I'm not scared.
I hope to God you're crazy.
Next day, we drive to Wade's house. Candy lets us in. He scowls, but he doesn't say anything.
It's so good to see you, Howard, and so nice of you to come all this way. Roger's typescript's all ready. Oh, I didn't realize you were bringing someone with you.
Marlowe drove me out. Also, he wanted to see you.
I can't imagine why.
It's going to take a little time.
Oh, then perhaps you'd both better take a seat. Now, what exactly was it you wanted to see me about, Mr. Marlowe?
Oh, this and that. I see you wearing that pendant again.
I often wear it. It was given to me by a very dear friend a long time ago.
Yeah, you told me. It's a British military badge of some sort, isn't it?
It's a jeweler's reproduction of one.
Eileen was in London all through the Blitz. She couldn't get away.
The man who gave it to me was lost soon afterwards, in that terrible year of 1940. He was in love with me.
And you were in love with him?
It was a long time ago, and there was a war. Strange things happen.
They do indeed.
Things get confused.
Sure. Like who you got married to. Guys I know in England sent me this. It's a certified copy of a marriage certificate. The date of the marriage is August 1942. The parties named are Paul Edward Marston and Eileen Victoria Samsel. The man's name was a fake, because in the army you have to get permission to get married. In the army, he had another name. I have his whole army history. It's a wonder to me that people never seem to realize that all you have to do is ask.
But he was dead long before I met Roger. Why could it possibly matter?
How many Paul Marstons would you say had had one side of their faces smashed by a delayed-action mortar shell and show the scars and marks of the plastic surgery that repaired the damage? How many Paul Marstons would you say had saved the lives of a couple of tough gamblers named Mindy Menendez and Randy Starr on the same occasion? They're still around. They've got good memories. They can talk when it suits them. Why ham it up anymore? Paul Marston and Terry Lennox were the same man. It can be proved beyond any shadow of doubt.
Eileen? Well, why don't you...
I saw him once, Howard. Just once. I didn't speak to him at all. Nor he to me. His hair was white and his face... It wasn't quite the same face... I used to pretend to myself that I'd find him again, but as he had been, eager, young, and unspoiled. But to find him married to that red-headed whore, that was disgusting. Roger, I could forgive. He drank, he worried about his work, and he hated himself because he was a mercenary hack. He was just a husband. Paul was either much more, or he was nothing. In the end, he was just nothing.
I wouldn't say he was just nothing.
Yeah, less than nothing. He knew what she was, but he married her. Then because she was what he knew she was, he killed her. And then he ran away and killed himself.
He didn't kill her, and you know it. Roger killed her, and you also know that.
Did he tell you?
He didn't have to. But he would have told me or someone else in time. It was tearing him in pieces not to.
No, Mr. Marlowe. Roger didn't know he'd killed her. He'd blacked out completely. He knew something was wrong, and he tried to bring it to the surface, but he couldn't. Perhaps in the last moments of his life it did come back. But not until then.
I don't believe this about Roger. He was no more psycho than I am.
When he was drunk, he blacked out.
I was there. I saw him do it.
Eileen, don't say anything.
She's gonna tell us about it. Just listen. She can't stop herself now.
I spied on them. I should be ashamed of that, but I'm ashamed of nothing. Poor Roger, he was too drunk to be a satisfactory lover. She came out after him screaming and naked, waving some kind of small statuette. And she used the filthiest language to humiliate him, and he was drunk. He'd had sudden spells of violence, and he had one then. He tore the statuette out of her hand.
There must have been a lot of blood.
Blood? Oh. When I got him back home in my car, he was very quiet. He wasn't drunk then. There was blood on his hair and all over the front of his coat. I cleaned him as best I could, and I put him to bed, and then I drove to the Chatsworth Reservoir, and you can guess what I did with a suitcase full of bloody clothes and towels. While I was away, he must have got up and drank a lot of whiskey, and then the next morning, he didn't remember a thing.
And what about Terry Lennox? Paul Marston, that is. Roger wrote something in his papers. He said a good man had died for him. Does that make sense to you?
Well, everything seemed to happen at once about that time. The papers were full of it, and then Paul was missing, and then he was dead in Mexico. And after all, Roger was still my husband.
What was Marlowe supposed to do in all this? It was your idea to get him involved.
I was afraid of Roger, and afraid for him. Mr. Marlowe was Paul's friend, almost the last person to see him and knew him, and Paul might have told him something, and I had to be sure. See, if he was dangerous, I wanted him on my side, and if he found out the truth, there might still be some way to save Roger.
Eileen, this isn't making sense.
I was afraid, Howard. Can't you understand that? I was living in the house with a murderer who might be a maniac.
But Marlowe didn't take on the job of looking after him, so you were still alone. Then Roger fired the gun, and for a week after that, you were alone with him again. Then Roger killed himself, only this time. Very conveniently, it was Marlowe who was alone with him.
What of it? Could I help that?
Apparently the police suspected you. They still do. All they need is a motive. It looks to me like they might be able to put one together now.
I think you'd both better leave my house. The sooner the better.
Well, did you or didn't you?
Did I or didn't I what?
Shoot Roger.
I was out. I'd forgotten my keys. I had a ring to get into the house. He was dead when I got home. All that is known. What's got into you, for God's sake?
Eileen, this has worried me from the start. I've stayed in this house 20 times. I've never known that front door to be locked during the daytime.
So I shot my own husband?
Assuming that he was your husband. You had another when you married him.
Thank you, Mr. Marlowe. Thank you, Howard. Roger's last book, his swan song, is there in front of you. Take it and go. And I think you'd better call the police and tell them what you both think. Now, I'm very tired, and I have a headache.
Just a moment, Mrs. Wade. Let's finish the job. No sense in being bitter. That suitcase you threw into the Chatsworth Reservoir, was it heavy?
It was very heavy, of course.
So how'd you get it over the high wire fence around the reservoir?
What? The fence? Well, I suppose in emergencies one has an abnormal strength to do what has to be done. Somehow or other I did it, that's all.
There isn't any fence.
Isn't any fence?
And there was no blood on Roger's clothes. And Sylvia wasn't killed outside the guest house, but inside it on the bed. And there was practically no blood because she had already been shot dead with a gun before the statuette was used to beat her face to a pulp. And the dead Mrs. Wade bleed very little.
I suppose you were there.
I was here when Roger was killed. I left him trying to remember what really happened the night Sylvia died. Maybe he did remember, and then he knew once and for all that he wasn't the murderer.
So who was?
I think you know the answer.
Do I?
That's why Roger had to be silenced, too.
Just go, both of you. I'm going to my room to lie down. Leave me in peace.
We watch her go. She goes up the stairs slowly, moving with calm elegance, and disappears into her room. Silence.
What was that about the wire fence?
Just a gag. Maybe it has a fence around it, maybe not. I have no idea.
But neither did she.
Of course not. She killed them both.
Well, we've got to call the police.
Why?
My God, Marlowe, we have to.
Tomorrow. Pick up your pile of unfinished novel. We haven't enough evidence to swat a fly with. Let the law enforcement people do their own dirty work.
There's such a thing as justice.
Tomorrow.
Un millón de perdones, señor. I was wrong about you. She killed the boss. I think I...
No hard feelings, Candy. The señora is very tired. She's gone to her room.
I show you out.
Now, I've been thinking she must be a little insane. I guess they'll never convict her.
They won't even try. But she doesn't know that.
I went home, but I couldn't sleep. I seemed to hear a steady ticking somewhere, but there wasn't anything in the house to tick. The ticking was in my head. I was a one-man death watch.
Yeah?
This is Candy, señor.
Good morning, Candy.
La señora está muerta.
Dead. What a cold, black, noiseless word it is in any language. The lady is dead. She left a confession to both murders. She'd always known that if Roger ever realized what had really happened, it was all over for her. But somehow Eileen's confession never got out into the wide world. I guess old man Harlan Potter didn't want anyone digging up some more dirt about his tramp of a daughter. And Eileen's story would have created a bigger sensation than anything her husband ever wrote. So Howard Spencer knew, and I knew. But the case was closed. No more questions asked. Then, this very morning, I find a stranger waiting for me in my office. He's a well-dressed Mexican. He's tall and very slender and very elegant, with a neat, dark mustache, rather longer than we wear. He wears green sunglasses and carries an introduction from my old gambler friend, Menendez. He says his name is Señor Mayoranas.
So, how can I help you?
You wish certain information about Señor Lennox, I am told.
The last scene only.
I was there at the time, Señor. I had a position at the hotel in Otatuclan where Señor Lennox died. I was the person who took the letter he wrote to you to the Correo, the post office, after the shooting, of course. But he gave me the letter beforehand.
You ought to have looked inside. It had a large piece of money.
The letter was sealed. I am an honorable man.
Señor Lennox had powerful friends.
I don't understand, señor.
In a small place like Otatuclan, it must have been very easy to fix anything if you had influential gangster friends with money who owe you their lives.
You think Señor Lennox may still be alive?
Sure. The suicide was some sort of fake to back up the confession.
Well, that is possible, señor, but...
No buts. Will you do me a favor? Take off those sunglasses.
But...
No buts. They've done a wonderful job on you, Terry, courtesy of your rich gambler friends. But nobody can change the color of a man's eyes.
I suppose it's too early for a gimlet.
Far too early. You knew who killed Sylvia.
Of course. It was Eileen. But it's pretty tough to turn a woman in for murder, even if she never meant much to you.
You were married to her.
Oh, that was in the past, wartime stuff.
It wouldn't have suited either of you to be exposed as bigamists. Too much to lose. Was Harlan Potter in on all this?
He didn't care so long as I kept my mouth shut. That was the message. He didn't care who killed his daughter as long as the scandal didn't come out. He's a cold-hearted bastard, and my guess is that he believes I'm dead. A part of the reason I left the confession was to keep him off my back. Who would tell him otherwise? Unless you did.
What I'd tell him you could fold into a blade of grass.
So, What about that gimlet?
The 5C notes I keep, I spent it all on expenses and research. The portrait of Madison, I enjoyed playing with. It's all yours now.
It's yours to keep. I've got plenty. You could have let the whole case lie. You didn't have to go on asking questions.
I know. And maybe after Eileen had killed her husband and got away with it, she might have gone on to better things. He was of no real importance, of course. Just a human being with blood and brains and emotions.
I didn't want anyone to get hurt. But I wouldn't have had a dog's chance up there once they'd found the body. I was the deceived husband, so I was number one suspect. The can of worms had bigamy inside as well as murder. Did I think about Roger Wade? Of course not. A man can't figure every angle that quick. I was scared, and I ran. What should I have done?
I don't know.
Eileen had a mad streak. I knew that back in the Blitz when I was wild about her. She might have killed him anyway.
Yeah, she might.
Well, thaw out a little. Let's go have a drink somewhere. We were pretty good friends once.
Were we? I forget. Pick up your money, Señor Majoranus. It has too much blood on it.
You're a poor man.
How would you know?
I'm trying to pay you back, and you won't let me. I couldn't have told you any more than I did. You wouldn't have stood for it.
That's as nice a thing as was ever said to me.
I'm glad you like something about me.
I'm not sore at you. You had nice ways and nice qualities, but there was something wrong. You had standards, and you lived up to them, but they were personal. Maybe the war did that. Maybe you were born that way. Strange thing is, Roger Wade believed you'd saved his life by taking the rap. Instead, you signed his death warrant.
How was I supposed to know that?
You bought a lot of me, Terry. For a smile and a nod and a wave of the hand and a few quiet drinks in a quiet bar here and there. It was nice while it lasted. So long, amigo. I won't say goodbye. I said it to you when it meant something. I said it when it was sad and lonely and final.
I came back too late.
There was a sudden glint of tears in his eyes. He put his dark glasses back on quickly.
There's nothing left here inside. I've had it, Marlo.
I know.
Well, I guess that winds things up.
So long, Señor Majoranus. Nice to have known you. However briefly.
Goodbye.
So here I am, drinking the gimlet I wouldn't drink with him. I listened to his footsteps going away down the imitation marble corridor. Maybe I wanted him to stop suddenly and turn and come back and talk me out of the way I felt. Well, he didn't. I won't see him again. I won't see any of them again. Except for the cops. No way has yet been invented to say goodbye to them.
In The Long Goodbye by Raymond Chandler, dramatized by Stephen Wyatt. Philip Marlowe was played by Toby Stevens, Terry Lennox by Trevor White, and Eileen Wade by Saskia Reeves. Roger Wade was played by Peter Policapu, Howard Spencer by James Lally, Candy by Simon Bubb, and Menendez by Alan Raglan. The director was Claire Grove.
And the classic Chandler series continues next week. When a rare gold coin is stolen from her collection, Mrs. Murdoch hires Marlowe to find it. The tough matriarch is convinced about the identity of the thief, but Marlowe's own inquiries lead him elsewhere. He soon finds himself caught in the crossfire of a family at war with itself. The High Window is next Saturday afternoon at 2:30. After the news, Lady Mary Soames, Winston Churchill's youngest and only surviving child, reminisces as in Weekend Woman's Hour.